Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Jer Armitage, an author of You Shall Never Know Security and You Know It's True, and a bunch of other collections. Who am I joined with?
It's me, Derek Sotak. I wrote a couple books on nachos and William O. Podgson's role-playing game, because he's the one that told me to make it, Gracie's Are Dreaming of My Death. All available on nachonomics.com.
Yeah, it sounds like you got a commission from the old Hodgson.
Yep, he left me nothing, just like he did everyone else.
All right, so we are covering some folk horror, which is, I would say it's more of a Derek thing, although I like it too.
Yeah, you're the one that kind of got me into this, I feel, because you were like... I don't know. I don't know if I call you a fan, but I feel like you were talking it up. You were always asking me, like, hey, you like folk horror, right? And I'm like, kind of, I guess.
I molded you into what I wanted you to become.
Exactly. This has just been a very long con on your part.
You had mentioned a book about folk horror that you were reading. What book is that?
I could not tell you the name of it.
Well, this is going fucking smashingly here.
I can look it up and in the future put it in here. Insert name of book here.
What is
that book? Yeah, you know.
But like, what is the book about?
Just about folk horror films.
Does it just list off films that are folk horror, or does it have some thesis or anything? Or
I mean, it has a list of here's some folk horror films, and then discusses them in the larger folk horror picture.
You've heard of the internet, right?
I have, but I am talking to you as opposed to going through this and looking this up right now.
But I just meant more. No, that's not where I was insulting you. I was insulting you more in the sense of like, this sounds just like a listicle on folk horror.
I mean, it's a book where they talk about it with, like, a, like, a professional view.
Scholarly
patina? Yeah, scholarly whatever. That's the word I'm thinking of. It's not just Fat Noobs 420 talking about his favorite folk horror books.
Is it spelled N-O-B-S or N-E-W-B-S?
It's P-H-A-T-N-E-W-B-S. For 2-0, not 0, I guess. 420 with a 0 was already taken.
I'm not trusting that guy worth nothing. Not even on Fat Noobs. So this film, The Stone Tape, I would say in any list, correct me if I'm wrong, but any list you read about folk horror, this is not going to be on it.
It's in this book, though.
This is not folk horror. Explain yourself.
I mean, this is sort of this is where folk horror kind of gets like, well, is this folk horror? Is this not folk horror?
Well, make the pitch for why it is folk horror.
Science people coming in to investigate a thing about old somethings.
Oh, okay. So I guess poltergeist. I guess poltergeist is folk horror too, huh?
Well, poltergeist?
No. The answer is no. So when I was for the first 90% of the time I was watching this, I was thinking, this is not folk horror. Then after the ending, I'm like, all right, look, it'd be 25% folk horror, max.
Yeah, this may perhaps be better in the Lovecraftian or Lovecastian scenario that we set up.
I mean, it's really
many episodes ago.
It's really a ghost story, basically. But
I mean, there's ghosts, but I think ultimately, is it really a ghost story?
Well, let's get to that. So this 1972 we're talking about The Stone Tape. This 1972 BBC film was written by Nigel Neal, best known as the writer of the character Professor Bernard Quartermass, and he wrote the Quartermass films.
Quartermass.
Well, it's fucking spelled quarter.
Quartermass. That's not how you spell quarter.
So how do you pronounce it?
Quartermass.
All right,
because there's no R or second R in there.
So he wrote the Quartermass Experiment and Quartermass and the Pit. And have you seen all of them?
I have seen what exists of the miniseries they did, which is... 2 and 3. One only has, because there are, let's back up here. For a long time, England, just everything it made on TV, it recorded on video, which is why this film looks kind of not
like
great,
because
it was shot on video. Or anything you watch, like I Claudius, it was a big thing for the 70s. Looks like total shit because it shot on video. And for a long time, the BBC was like, no one in the future is ever going to want to see these, so we'll just copy over all these old videotapes. So the first episode of the first Quartermass serial exists, and then apparently the other 5 episodes of the first one were lost, and no one has seen those unless you saw them on TV back in the day. But 2 and 3 all exist in their entirety.
I hope our peanut gallery notices that you did say Quartermass there.
I'm subject to it as well.
Nigel Neal, the writer, he basically helped revolutionize British television. by picking up the tempo of stories and using science fiction as a way to comment on and in some ways predict trends. For example, in 1968, he wrote a television drama, and with the title of this, who could not look this up? The title is called The Year of the Sex Olympics. I mean, goddamn. That can go in a million different directions.
Uh-huh.
The description is, this. Remember, this is 1968. Influenced by concerns about overpopulation, the counterculture of the 1960s, and the societal effects of television, the play depicts a world of the future where a small elite controls the mass media, keeping the lower classes docile by serving them an endless diet of lowest common denominator programs and pornography. The play concentrates on the idea of the program controllers have for a new program that will follow the trials and tribulations of a group of people left to fend for themselves on a remote island. I wonder if, like, the people who made Survivor just read that and they were like, let's do that.
Yeah, I mean, it did come from England originally, so maybe.
So, I mean, maybe what passed as satire, someone was smart enough to be like, no, that would actually work.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that just what the future is? Like, every shocking thing from the past is now reality?
The future is people on an island having sex, stamping on your face forever.
I see what you did there.
The head of the BBC had approached Neil about writing a play to be shown during the Christmas period, and in the tradition of Charles Dickens, he wanted to write a ghost tale. A lot of his work was science fiction and featured the kind of, I guess, not a premise, but like a trope of the ancient colliding with the newfangled. Like his previous play before was called You Must Listen, which concerned a telecommunications engineer who discovers that a telephone line has somehow preserved the final conversation between a woman and her lover before her suicide. So a little bit kind of like this story. Mm-hmm. Here, the plot involves the idea of stones in a building acting as a type of recording medium for past events, or leaving a psychic impression on a physical structure, which then obviously became the basis for what you might have heard called the stone tape theory, or the idea that ghosts and hauntings are analogous to tape recordings, that mental impressions during emotional or traumatic events could be projected in the form of energy, in a sense recorded onto rocks and other items and replayed under certain conditions. Although as some commentators pointed out, and which is quite obvious, the problem is that we know of no mechanism that could record such information in a stone or play it back. Chunks of stone do not have the same properties as reels of tape, and calling it a theory rather than some stupid shit that sounds cool, this kind of gives it a gloss of credibility where there is none.
Uh-huh.
Have you heard of stone tape theory before?
Yes, that's why I was like, oh, here's an opportunity in which to watch this. Let's go for it.
I don't know how anyone could put that in as a theory, as in just like, oh, that's a cool idea from a movie.
You just say anything, right? Hey, this is a possibility. Does that make it a theory?
I mean, the closest that you could get was the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombings, where their, you know, their forms were imprinted in the ashes.
Yeah, which they do mention.
They mention that in the movie, yeah.
Yeah. I guess there is a... I don't remember the situation in which this came up, but there is a way where you can... If you carve something and, like, shout while you're doing it, the vibrations in that could change the depth. Sort of like a record player, where in carvings in stone, you can base it off of that and maybe get sound of it. But I think they determined that does not actually work well. Like, it may work to a tiny degree, but nowhere near, like, manifesting a ghost in this case.
I thought you were going to say there was a theory where... if there's wet cement and you get it just in time, it's possible for someone to put their imprints in the cement for it to harden for all time.
As you said, Derek, it follows it forever.
You can prove that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dogs are doing your theory inadvertently by just not looking where they walk.
Isn't that what that ghost dog movie's about?
I haven't seen it yet, but don't spoil it. The script was originally called Breakthrough, which is not as cool a title. It was going to be featured. It was going to be a featured episode of the Dead of Night show, which was a British science sci-fi anthology. So, have you ever seen that before? Dead of Night?
No, like England had a whole ton of these, like short, like here's six episodes of horror stuff, like anthologies that, like, hey, I wish we did more of that.
You mean America as really TV shows or movies?
As TV shows.
Yeah. Well,
this is our BBC film, but it's only shown on BBC. Whatever.
Well, I mean, I don't want to say this and get it wrong, and I'm trying to stall so I could try and quickly look up on my phone. Wasn't Dead of Night the first anthology horror film of all time?
Oh, I don't know.
With, like, the puppet? It's like 1945 or something.
Oh, I mean, that is certainly...
Yeah, that is right. Dead of Night.
Trilogy of Terror was the first one that I was aware of, but it was...
No, that's like the first one that... Really? No, Dead of Night was from 1945. Like,
yeah, so this
I think it's the first horror anthology.
Okay. Look at that, we're educational.
So this film was directed by a Hungarian director named Peter Sasdy, who directed a bunch of Hammer films, although later ones in the series, like the fifth Dracula installment, Taste the Blood of Dracula.
Is it just called the fifth Dracula installment, The Blood of Dracula?
I don't get that title. Doesn't he taste your blood? I mean,
he needs to give you some of his blood to make you a thrall or turn you into a vampire. So perhaps that's the plot of the film.
Well, I mean, everything sounds a little too topsy-turvy in that one. He also did Countess Dracula and The Hands of the Ripper. Mm-hmm. And in 1977, he directed the following movie. And again, how could you not look this one up? Welcome to Blood City. The plot. Five strangers awake, finding themselves with no memory in a world resembling the Wild West. Their task is to become exempt from being killed. What the townspeople refer to as being immortal, by killing 20 of the other inhabitants of the town under the scrutiny of the sheriff. Otherwise, they will spend their lives in slavery. It sounds pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty high concept for whatever year that was.
So the Stone Tape was very well received by audiences and critics alike. As one example, the Encyclopedia of TV Science Fiction calls it arguably the most creepy drama ever seen on television. In terms of obvious cultural legacies, it was an influence on the development of Poltergeist, and sounds a bit similar in premise to John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness, where a cylinder records a glimpse of the devil, and the movie includes a reference to Neil University. But Nigel Neal had actually written an earlier treatment for Halloween 3 that went nowhere, and was not a fan of Carpenter. He said, quote, "For the record, I have nothing to do with the film, and I have not seen it. It sounds pretty bad. With an homage like this, one might say, who needs insults? I can only imagine that it is a whimsical riposte for me having my name removed from a film I wrote a few years ago, a reference to Halloween 3, at which Mr. Carpenter carpentered into sawdust."
Ooh.
You can tell that man's a writer.
Yeah, he was obviously waiting for Rob Zombie to remake it.
Boy. So the movie, I like this movie quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely dated looking, but I think it is very solid overall.
Is that all you gotta say?
No, I mean, we're gonna get into it, and then we're gonna expound on these things. No, but let's just spoil the whole thing now before we get into it.
Well, so, I will say I like the movie quite a bit. There is only one title credit at the beginning, and it just says, The Stone Tape by Nigel Neal. It's very appropriate, because this really does feel like a writer showcase, so to speak. Like, it feels like a play. I mean, I guess since it is a play.
Yeah.
It's extremely dialogue-heavy. And it feels like that rare movie nowadays that, like, is designed for adults.
If they remade this, it'd be a bunch of, like, hunky 20-something college students, not old electrical engineers goofing around in this.
And the dialogue would be cut by, like, one-fifth. And there'd be many more, like, things happen pretty rapidly, dialogue-wise. I mean, the movie's not boring or anything, but, like, character motivation and background is revealed, like, somewhat subtly. The dialogue moves very briskly, and the movie expects you to be following along.
Yeah, I guess there was more Japanese racism than I would have expected.
Well, I mean, it was, what, the 70s in England?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Also, they don't know they're being recorded.
Uh-huh.
They don't know this is leaving the room. And when the boss is there participating, it's free game for everybody. Mm-hmm. So this company, Ryan Electrics, has a research team that is trying to develop a new recording medium. And for that purpose, they have bought the Tasker Lands Estate, so named because it was owned by the Tasker family, and this was their lands. Makes sense, right?
It adds up.
It does seem a bit of a stretch that this company would purchase this old legendary house for its sound recording research, yet seem to have, like, no knowledge of its history of exorcism or haunting.
Yeah, why would they care about that kind of thing?
Or they don't seem to care that the work crews refused to finish working there and renovating a room because they heard the sounds of a lady screaming to her death.
I mean, that just happens in every old building in England, right?
Wouldn't they know that?
Thousands of years of dead people and ghosts everywhere.
There is a computer programmer, Jill, who at the very beginning of the movie is in a vehicle between two Ryan Electric trucks and for some reason seems to have a nervous breakdown about it. I mean, at first I thought, like, what are the odds of her being stuck between two Ryan Electric trucks? And then I was like, oh, that's the company. First, I was like, what, is that a sign? Like, I thought that was the ghost sighting originally. Because I kind of read the description beforehand that she sees a ghost. And I was like, I didn't see a ghost. I just saw two trucks.
Ghost trucks.
It seems like she's completely unstable at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, this is not the first haunted house investigation film or book with a flighty female as a lead. See House of Haunted Hill.
Well, I guess with House of Haunted Hill, you also had a little more of a look into her mental life, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Like, you kind of knew she had the issue with her mother, that she was lonely, that she, like, desperately needed some kind of excitement in her life. I mean, I guess it's a little bit of a weakness of this narrative, is that you don't exactly know what her deal is, other than she's very sensitive.
Yeah.
She almost drives into a pit and has a nervous breakdown. It seems that Jill seems, like, that's her character, Jill. She seems to be on, like, permanent Shelley Duvall from The Shining mode. She's like, like, Jack Nicholson is always breaking down the wall, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bunch of dudes working here, led by Peter, who's a bit of a go-getter, arrogant rascal. And it seems like there's a history between he and Jill. He's the boss, and although he's married with children, there's a line of dialogue later when they're fighting, when he says something like, "And if you couldn't take my family from me," which implies they had an affair. And later in the movie, we see a secretary in his office late at night wearing less clothing than she should to indicate that he's a lecherous one.
A rapscallion.
He also looks a bit like evil Mark Hamill, or haggard Last Jedi Mark Hamill, and no one wants that around.
Unless he's chugging some green milk that froths all over his lips, nobody cares.
So Peter leads this crew, and they all jest and joke with each other, and it's, you know, very rapid fire. And then we learn that one room in this kind of mansion was not refurbished, as it has weeping fungus on the walls, which is a name for rot. And it has a bunch of spam, I guess it was occupied by soldiers during World War II. And it has a letter to Santa that says, "What I need for Christmas is please go away."
It has a letter to Father Christmas, thank you very much, is not that, Santa.
Is that not the same thing as Santa?
I mean, it's basically the same thing, but mild differences.
Are they? Is that your one note you took?
No, my other note was, was there spam in this because Monty Python was such a big thing recently? And since Monty Python came out in 1970, a little bit before this, or the spam sketch for Monty Python was in 1970, I wouldn't doubt it. They had a little extra spam lying around and be like, hey, let's throw this in here.
I didn't know spam was a internationally known product.
Did you not know about it from Monty Python to begin with?
I've never seen a Monty Python sketch in my life. So.
Oh, boy.
And it seems this room is an environmental hazard. So 10 minutes into the movie and Jill sees a ghost in the room. Although this is one of the tragically inept looking visuals. it might have been better if they just didn't even try. Like, it really doesn't add much.
They just had a lady, like an actual lady there who disappeared, not a shitty video projection.
Yeah, it kind of looks like the, like, Leia hologram from A New Hope. Except it's
a lot of Star Wars references today. What's going on, buddy?
It's presented as scary. But it just looks like a kind of cut and pasted into the screen. It looks very terrible. It's like you know more about digital effects than I do. How would you describe it?
If you want to be technical, they just rotoscoped a lady in there, which looks very cheesy.
What does rotoscoping mean?
So they will, it's an oldie timey technique. So they'll take a pass at the motion the camera is doing without the person there. And then they will make the exact same pass, but put a person in there. And then kind of marry those two together so it seems more out of place. Which is why it looks like, oh, this is definitely just superimposed over the image.
Yeah, it looked really shitty.
Yeah.
So Jill immediately tells everyone she's seen a ghost, which kind of puts up in flames everyone's idea saying how they needed her there for her intelligence. Yeah. So they're all hanging out at a local bar, and some old hag barmaid brags about how she used to be a good time girl during the war for the American soldiers. I mean, it must have been a rough last 30 years. Although, wasn't the election of Edward Heath in 1970 hard on everybody? She mentioned how a colored soldier said that there were guppies in the wall. That's never explained, but a savvy audience member might know that in Caribbean folklore, a duppy is a ghost. Huh. Not that I knew that, but I read it on IMDb. But it's an indication of the movie's strengths. Like, it's just a throwaway line. Like, They don't explain what that means. And the British crew is just like, guppies, like a fish. Like, they don't know what the fuck she's talking about. But it's like, oh, if you're like, if you happen to know that, it's like a little bit of scene building. It's a little bit of world building.
Yeah, like, this is the shocking thing we don't get in modern films where everyone is just assumed to be an idiot and has everything spoken out to them, you know, 50,000 times to make sure you get it.
Yeah, there's just like a little bit of a reference to something you, like, only a little savvy audience member might know. Yeah. Kind of like you never see, when they see a, you ever go to like a foreign film and there's parts of it that are not subtitled and somebody laughs at the not subtitled part and you're like, fuck that guy.
You're like, oh boy.
But anyway, other crew members hear squealing in the same room and they consult a vicar and archivist who mentions records show that there was an exorcism there. The crew discovers a news story that says a 19-year-old maid, Louisa, fell down the steps and died there decades ago. And 2 years after she died, that's when the exorcism happened. Someone wryly comments, not bad press for a maid. So it's like 30 minutes into the movie and everyone believes there's a ghost. Because, I mean, many of the crew can hear it. Jill can see it. There are footsteps and screams. And they kind of figure like, hey, we're scientists and engineers. Let's try and figure this out. It kind of made me realize between this and that story when love came to whatever. I like the genre of horror movies or like horror literature or horror genre where people quickly understand that like, oh, there is something supernatural going on and they try and figure it out. I feel like that kind of works for me, especially in horror movies, because like everyone going in knows they're going to watch a horror movie. Mm-hmm. They know there's something supernatural afoot. Like, let's fucking get to it already.
Yeah, like, the only people who are not surprised there are ghosts are the people in the actual film. Like, yeah, everyone who's coming to see this knows it's there. And yeah, I am in your same boat where I do like a movie where they try and science out a supernatural thing.
I mean, I kind of always have my fantasy of, like, an anthology or a movie where, like, you don't know what genres it's going to be. It's good, like...
Yeah.
But that is not the world we live in. One sympathetic crew member, Collie, says he cannot stand the sound of a woman screaming. He said he endured with his wife a car crash. And Jill asks, did she die? And he says, no, I mean a divorce. Which I thought was kind of clever. So I guess if there's a criticism, it's like they devised these theories very quickly. Like these speculative, wildly out there theories about what's going on. With like everyone just seems to kind of accept it very quickly. But they have a theory that, like, oh, the stones in the room have somehow preserved the image of the maid's death. And, you know, hey, this could be the recording medium we need. Although I'm not sure what the plan here is. It's like, what are they going to do? They're like, hey, England, you've heard of pet rocks. You want boulders in your living room so you can see a repeating image that you can't control?
Well, you know, you start with that, and then you work down to, like, a little pebble you put in a machine and it projects something on the wall.
Like, they have this theory in part because the sounds of the screams don't echo, and the sounds can't be recorded, so they think, oh, the images and sounds must be in people's minds. The rock itself is Kentish rag, which is a stone used all over London, which can explain a lot of ghost sightings. They interview a local townie who mentions ghosts, not a ghost, but ghosts, and that one of his friends, Jackie, talked to them. And now he's fine, laughing all day in the asylum. And it seems like the crew doesn't really pick up on the context clue of, like, ghosts versus a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
You would also think if everyone acknowledges a ghost, and then someone mentions, yeah, my friend went insane upon talking to him, you might want to tread very carefully.
I mean, I can kind of pass the, oh yeah, there you saw a ghost, so you're saying there's ghosts there. Sure, whatever. But the... Oh, yeah, it also drives people insane if you're not careful. That's probably something you should pay a little more attention to.
Certainly. Yeah, I'd watch out for that.
Yeah.
Jill thinks, and this is kind of a nice chilling image of how awful it must be, that the last remaining thing of you is the sounds and sights of you right about to die. So they perform a bunch of tests on the room. They have a theory that some people, just as some people are colorblind, others are ghost blind. Because there's one frustrated crew member who can't see or hear anything. I guess he's like, whatever, I'm still getting paid, what the fuck do I care? The ghost, or whatever it might be, also has a computer spit out text that reads, prayer, pray, save, save. Although who hasn't been spooked by some strange shit coming out of a printer?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be a ghost too, of course you're going to say creepy things. You're not going to be like, that sandwich looks really good, guys.
Especially back in the 70s, I bet it was just Wingdings printing out all the time.
Yeah.
But Ryan Electronics is not paying for mystery ghost hunters. So they're like, hey, you need to share Tasker Lance with his research team working on this hideously ugly washing machine that looks like a tie-in with Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. Who would buy that fucking washing machine with all these different color wheels on it?
Well, if it, you know, automatically fixed all your clothes when you put them in them, like Crothall said it would. Well, maybe, maybe.
I guess feeding into the idea of folk horror, maybe. It's found out that this room actually existed in Saxon times, and there were sites and exorcism and other chicanery long before this house was even built. So the crew performs more bleepy bloopy tests, including some with lasers and funnels to make loud noises. It seems to be driving people crazy with noise. And then after enough tests, no one hears or sees anything. And if, you know, big speculation one is like, oh, the stones are a recording medium, then big speculation two is Jill's like, oh, these loud obtrusive tests have somehow deleted or overwrote the ghost. Because she's gone.
Yeah, they also do a lot of, like, they pull a stone out of the wall, which I would think if you are considering the entire room as a recording medium, you don't delete part of it. Expect it to still work as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder if, like, when the stone was removed out of the wall, like, the recording was, like, 5% fuzzier, you know?
Yeah, it got, like, a little bit of word got cut out somewhere that they just clipped out for using that.
So, it's this experiment's all a failure now. Peter now spends his days on the phone backpedaling with his boss about, like, yeah, I might have said I had an unbelievable new breakthrough, but, you know, what's a breakthrough, really? While that washing machine man gloats and gloats and gloats.
I mean, technically, they did make a breakthrough. They just don't know how to use this technology.
Well, I mean, they have no, like, way to prove.
Their guess science is probably sound based off of what this is. They just have no idea how to actually use it.
They have no way to prove their breakthrough.
Uh-huh.
So Jill has the idea that while the Louisa ghost has been erased, there is something older, a deeper level recordings. Kind of like if Louisa was there, you put a bit of whiteout on there and then you scrape the whiteout away and you see the dreadful typos beneath.
Mm-hmm.
There are some dreadful typos. It also reminds me of one of my favorite pretentious words. You know the word palimpsest?
Oh, I do, yes.
A manuscript.
That's very well
put. Usually written on papyrus or parchment, if you're being really pretentious, on which more than one text has been written, with the earlier writing incompletely erased and still visible. So one can say that these stones are like a palimpsest.
Or, I don't know if you had a oldie-timey answering machine back in the day that...
Aren't they all oldie-timey?
A especially oldie-timey one, especially back in the day, where the tape recording was not great. So you know, get a couple years of that going, and then you start being able to hear previous recordings bleeding through onto the new recordings.
Oh, that's pretty creepy.
So full of tape power,
I guess. Would that be exactly? Like,
It would be the whatever magnet that they use to erase the tape starts failing because it's old enough, and it just doesn't do as good a job deleting everything.
It's still fucking amazing that you can record speech. I don't understand how that works.
Yeah, I mean, just think of I guess any of these things are magic. Like, okay, you have a record, which are just grooves that you run a piece of metal on, and it turns into
sound. I still
don't
understand that. I tried to talk to a sound engineer once about it. So it's like, is every album completely and utterly... Like, could you look at the back of an album and be like, oh yeah, that's the Rolling Stones, I Can't Get No Satisfaction. I could tell by the fucking... this line and that line.
I would... guess probably not, because you cannot see enough of the grooves to tell that. I'm sure some pretentious person would say, oh yeah, I'm good enough at this.
How do grooves in a record play sounds? How do they play music? I don't understand.
So the needle goes up and down in the grooves, and then somehow the up and down gets converted to sound via magic,
That's a big somehow.
Yeah, I know.
Somehow's carrying a lot of load right there.
Grooves,
like, how
question mark equals
does
noise.
That happen? I don't understand. I don't
but
understand.
CDs make more sense, where you shoot a laser beam at something and then a movie shows.
No, I don't understand how you could record sound. I just don't. It's like amazing. Like, after they figured out sound recording, they should be like, we're done.
Yeah.
This is as far as humanity can go. I don't. It's fucking mind boggling to me.
I mean, what about recording picture?
Good thing I'm sitting down, Derek.
Yeah.
For some reason,
blow your mind there.
For some reason, recording sound is crazier to me. Because
I
can kind of understand how
this might be the easier thing to do.
I can kind of understand how a photo works. Like they the flash on the thing and you develop it. And I kind of understand that a little bit. But the sound, I don't fucking get it. It's ethereal. There's nothing there, man.
Anyway. I mean, it's just waves. I mean, the waves are there. That's the thing.
I haven't seen a sound wave other than on my computer.
This is true.
I don't get exactly why Jill had this theory about erasing the ghosts and what supports it.
Because she is somewhat psychic and can no longer detect.
Well, she's
the
not really
there.
Psychic. She's just
got medium power, sensitive powers, whatever.
She seems to finally remember. Oh yeah, that townie had said ghosts, not ghost. And that the maid's death was maybe like the most recent and clearest of the recordings. So there might be something underneath, multiple things underneath. Peter doesn't want to hear this shit, and he says, "You're on 2 months leave. You sound crazy." But she's always been a bit frantic, and it's kind of a bit of a dangerous game to be like, "I'm putting you on 2 months leave to the woman you've had an affair with."
Mm-hmm. That was in the '70s. They didn't care about that kind of thing. It was just kind of expected. I guess.
I mean, he's not really even hiding his secretary with the late night skimpy clothing. I mean, I appreciate it. Anyway, she returns to the room. And again, the effects do not hold up whatsoever and are the weakest part of the film. But I guess we see something like red dots and green smog-like entities that make her appear to fall into another dimension, and then she's found dead.
I mean, this is definitely a lack of, you know, money to make, you know, what it is. But was this another dimension that she was going into, or back in time to whatever, like, stone cult circle thing appeared to be there? That they showed that was what this was built on, presumably?
I'm not sure.
I mean, I don't know if it really matters either way. I think it is cooler the other dimension based off of, you know, what they show and what that could imply. But
I mean, they just kind of show red dots and green smog. And I can't imagine that's what the other dimension creatures would be. Like, little dots and smoggy-like things.
Mm-hmm.
I just got the impression it's like some ancient, powerful force that is...
Yeah.
Although, are there two coincidences... It's like, there were ancient powerful forces here, and coincidentally, there are also stones here that can record that.
I mean, it might just be the fact that it was built on this gate, whatever, is what actually powers up the stones to be able to record and keep this stuff there.
Or maybe it's like from beyond, and there are always these entities, it's just these stones are able to record it.
Yep, also possible.
So there was an inquest into her death, where Peter just told everyone, oh, she was crazy. Which the crew does not particularly like. And he has her research destroyed, and the environmental board is like, yeah, maybe a room that has something described as weeping fungus isn't something we need to have people in, they shut it down. Peter visits the room one last time, and he hears its last recording. Jill screaming his name while she dies. Though I kind of do wonder why she'd be screaming his name. I mean, he seemed like such a giant goober, he wasn't too helpful.
Yeah. You don't need it for that. For him.
So what's your pitch for this being folk horror?
I mean, that they are modern scientists dealing with whatever ancient mess is here.
I feel like it's folk horror in the sense that, like, there's some ancient evil from the old ways.
Yeah, the land is bad. There's something going on there. There's been a history of events.
But it doesn't have any... It's not a rural setting in any way.
I mean, they're out in the country.
I mean, so this could be a building in this... It doesn't really make it... They're just in this building the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
There's not, like, country beliefs. There's not, like, pagan beliefs.
Well, the
like, no
old tiny house was built on the... On this old Saxon foundation from 1,000 years earlier.
Yeah. That's fair, but it's not like they encounter people who have, like, oh, we got different, there's different beliefs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to argue to say, oh, this is the definition of folk horror there, but I think, I mean, it helps that folk horror is such a loose definition to begin with.
Yeah.
You could be like, oh, okay, I can see it this way. I mean, I can also see it as you could say this is a Lovecraftian thing. I'm totally saying that, too. Or, you know, it could just be a ghost story with a little extra on there. Any of those, I think, apply.
I like it quite a bit, though.
Yeah, I did think that, because Crowthall, the guy with the super washing machine, he's keep running around and being like, oh, I need more room for my stuff. I thought the main lead, would be like, oh, I've got this room you can put your stuff in, whatever ghost would be him. I think that would be the mean ending that Tales from the Crypt would spin with this. But, you know, back in the 70s, we weren't as cynical, so we didn't
You need some corpse cackling, though.
Yeah, they exactly.
They didn't have the budget for that. Yeah, I like the movie quite a bit, and I would recommend it to others.
I could recommend this to people with the caveat of, that's going to look pretty bad. Like,
yeah, I was a little worried when we were first, watching it on, when it was on the, like, the terrible visual display.
Mm-hmm.
It looks grainy. It felt the beats in the beginning, before I got into the rhythm of it, it felt like a kind of like corny sitcom, which I didn't understand.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't understand the beats that they were going on. Like, am I like supposed to be funny? Like, this seems very cheesy when they're like, there's a little Martian character, like the mascot of their
Oh, I forgot about that guy.
And I'm like, what the fuck is going on in this movie? But then you kind of like get into its groove. And once he actually sees the ghost and starts moving along, you kind of get where it's going. I liked it quite a bit. I thought it was very interesting. I mean, I guess when I read about it a little bit before and everyone was like, oh, it's so frightening, XYZ, I was a little underwhelmed by the ending. Mm-hmm. I guess the ending is maybe frightening in a like philosophical sense rather than like a visceral sense.
Yeah, there is more than just ghosts here. Ghosts are the least of your problems, frankly, when it comes to this room.
Yeah, but it is, I guess, pretty haunting to imagine that the last thing she said is recorded of all time for screaming out for help for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the movie quite a bit.
Yeah, so. I mean, there is certainly, as you said, you can't go into this like a modern film. You need to kind of step back and go, okay, this is pitched at adults, not children or teenagers. So you need to get that kind of grasp. It is definitely 70s British. So everyone's going to talk a funny way.
And put on those subtitles.
Yeah, no subtitles. Like this, I was kind of be like, oh, I could normally understand most British stuff, but this is even a little rough even for me here.
Yeah. But yeah, I liked it a lot. So I'm glad we watched it.
As all BBC stuff is, I think it's hard to come by on any sort of like video or DVD or Blu-ray, just because you could, if you have a region free player, I'm sure you could find it. But I feel like a lot of it is not on streaming services, even like BritBox or Acorn. You're not getting a whole lot of this old timey stuff.
Yeah, we just rented it off Amazon though.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think this is large enough that it is the exception to the rule, but there's a lot of stuff that's just like, oh, nope, not available anywhere. And I think this is one that should be more available, or more people should have seen it. Like, I don't know anyone that has seen this, I don't think.
Oh, my
understanding, I've heard of it before, but
I think
it's
at the time it was a pretty big thing in the 70s.
Yeah.
But we're not in the 70s anymore.
No.
I would recommend people check it out.
Yeah, just, you know, when she walked up the stairs later and pulls the railing and you can see the wall kind of tilt a little bit because it's not attached firmly, just kind of overlook that.
I mean, I did. I didn't even notice it. I was too immersed in the tale, Derek.
Uh-huh. You were like, oh, she's going to fall into that other dimensional monster any second now.
I mean, I was more distracted when she falls into the other dimension. I'm like, ooh, boy.
And then starts shrieking down or whatever.
That looks pretty corny, but...
So yeah, grain of salt, but definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, yeah. So till next time.
Yep, would we have something that probably going to be more along the lines of an A24 film, but we'll see.
That's good. The movie we're going to watch, I had on my watch list at a time when it actually existed on a streaming service.
Uh-huh.
So
I mean, it exists on a streaming service now. It's just
but they gotta make me fork out those pounds, huh? I don't know how I feel about that.
I mean, it's in dollars.
Ooh, sign me up.
Adios.